Hello, and welcome to The Business Behind Small Business, the show that reminds you that just because you own a business doesn't mean you are a business owner. In each episode, we will discuss common issues small businesses face and offer tips and advice from the perspectives of two business owners, one that is built to sell and one that is built to inherit. We are your hosts, Savannah Stone and Tiffany Kao. There's a lot of business behind small business, so let's get to it. We've talked about this a lot in our second season, and there's still so much to learn. The pandemic brought working from home to the forefront, and it doesn't seem as though much will change now that the world is starting to open up. Unless, of course, we end up with a monkeypox epidemic, but let's not get too hasty. Working from home is certainly not a new thing, but learning how to create a culture with a remote team when you weren't remote before is new for a lot of people. So today we'll discuss working with a team you don't see. How to build a remote culture? Is it possible? Can you do it effectively? And if so, what's the secret to that success? Before we begin, please note our disclaimer. This is available in both our show notes and on our website and should be referred to before and or after this podcast.
So whether you voluntarily decided to allow your employees to work remote or you have been forced into it post-pandemic for no other reason than to offer something, anything to attract good talent these days, we can probably all agree that having some kind of work remote program will be commonplace in our world of business now. And it's not just reserved for that cool, techie, silicon type of companies anymore. Yay for us small business owners, right? So before, in previous episodes, we've mentioned that company culture exists, whether you are building it intentionally or not. So along this exact same line, your company culture today is probably evolving in tandem to your teams as they're adjusting to work remote fully or in some kind of hybrid model. So if we as employers don't stop and think about how we are reinforcing our culture, especially since previously those things were done through like habits and rituals and systems that were practiced in the office, which is all broken down by now, we'll be left playing catch up and finding a little bit too late that some of the culture was established unbeknownst to us and it wasn't what we wanted. Now, I gave this some thought because I myself am somebody who, funny enough, after this pandemic, really value the in-person interactions and being in the office. Although previously you would, you know, if you talked to me, I would be like, no, I love working from home. I love working remotely. I love working on the go. I don't want to be in the office with a bunch of people. But I think one of the reasons why working in the office versus working remotely presents such a challenge to establishing company culture is that when you're in the office, a lot of this culture is transmitted through your organizations by these in-person behaviors. So I'm talking about a lot of those nonverbal stuff like body language and showing through action and not so much the words, the values and behaviors that represents the company culture. See, it's not just about seeing what's been done, but also how it's being done, which is then observed, absorbed, and mimicked by others in the office. So employees, in turn, pick up on these cues from their leaders by simply being around them, by watching them in meetings, listening to their conversations, and modeling those behaviors for the next person to also watch and learn from them. So this is all done quite organically when everybody's in the office, and something that's quite difficult, if not impossible, to replicate when now you're all working remote and you can only see somebody from like their top half. And so one of the things is, you know, while I was doing research for this, is thinking about it maybe a little bit differently, is that now in this post-pandemic world, maybe it's not about replicating what we've had before, but taking this chance to kind of reset your company culture as a whole. This is what's suggested by an article in Harvard Business Review, and I couldn't agree with them more. You know, this is a good time for us as employers to step back and visualize, or revisualize rather, what our company culture can be and should be with these remote teams. A good example is thinking about whether or not it's time to kind of retool the word professionalism and what that means for the people in your company. So with the myriad of just so much video conferencing, this is giving a chance to allow us to be invited to each of our employees' homes, as well as the management team, and it's allowing us to see a human side of all of our teams. After all, who hasn't had the cameo appearance of somebody's baby or child in the background or their pet walking around on a video call?
That's right. My dog, you see my dog's tail like a shark fin.
I think your dog has also made several appearances by sound in our podcast as well. Just like hovering around behind you while we're doing this. But certainly that was something that was very much accepted now post-pandemic. Now, before the pandemic, I would say that if you heard somebody's child or dog barking in the background, it was deemed, immediately unprofessional on a conference call. But those rules seem to have relaxed now, and I think they'll stay relaxed. So having a baby on your lap while you're taking a conference call or a video call, rather, doesn't seem so unprofessional anymore. Well, I mean, if Elon Musk can do it, I guess, so can
we. True. I mean, no, I get what you're saying. I get that the rules are relaxed, but I kind of feel like why should they be? But we'll discuss that later.
That's a good question of why they should be, right? But I think people also take it to the extreme about how relaxed they are.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Let's find a good balance somewhere in there. But it is something to think about that maybe it doesn't have to be quite as stiff as it used to be. I also found some really great ways to build a culture of a work remote force in an article by cuttingedgepr.com. I have the full article linked in the show notes, but I picked out a few items on there that I thought were significant contributors to what a successful culture can be with a work remote workforce. So first thing in the article it says is that the number one thing to build a strong culture remotely is to promote and build team communication and working relationships. Now, there was a good few points here, right? So one of the things is to focus on reducing virtual distance. And what virtual distance is the sense of like a psychological and emotional detachment that kind of grows rather unconsciously when most of the encounters and experiences that people are having are happening on screens and electronic devices. That's probably something that can be focused on to lessen the negative impact by encouraging people on your team to actually use video calls instead of just doing voice and email. Next, also think about taking into account the introverts on your team. I laughed at that a little bit because I'm an introvert, so I kind of enjoy the fact that they actually thought about what the impact of this are on introverts. Now, it's probably a good thing for introverts right now because if you think about it, we certainly like to communicate more with the emails and voice calls and avoid that kind of in-person eye contact situations as much as possible. But at the same time, it's really easy for us to get detached from the team, even easier for us to get detached from the team. So one suggestion here is that, leaders and managers communicate the fact that their, virtual office door is always open. Before, people always say, hey, my office door is open. Now you just want to make sure they understand that your virtual office door is open so that they can always come speak to you if they have any issues or anything that, that's on their mind. Now, another suggestion that this article had, which I thought was pretty good, is don't misunderstand brief communication for clear communication. To be quite honest, I think this was probably a problem in the office when people were trying to be efficient and just use less words. And then what happened is everybody leaves the meeting trying to interpret what was meant.
What did I just hear?
Yeah. And that probably was never right half the time anyways. Mm-hmm. So naturally, with the fact that a team that's working remote, this piles on the challenge of communication when it's done through email, video, and phone calls. Mm-hmm. So one of the things in the culture is thinking about, making sure that you're driving the message that people want to practice ultra clear communication to avoid misinterpretations. The last two items I really did enjoy seeing. One of them is don't bombard your team with messages. Have you ever had someone send you an email to just follow up by a text or IM 5 minutes later? And if you don't reply, you get a phone call in about 20 minutes time.
Yep.
Yeah. Nobody likes that.
No, nobody would like that in any environment. I don't know that I would like that from anyone at any time, work or not.
I will tell you though, in the in-person environment, so I had a career, this happened a lot in one office I was at. For whatever reason, everything was on fire all the time. So like if somebody sends you an email and you don't reply in 5 minutes, you definitely get a text in about 10 minutes time. If you don't reply to that, then you get a phone call in about, then if they're nice, probably been done another 15 minutes. And then after that, 10 minutes later, they show up in your office. And I'm like, dude, calm down.
Oh my Lord. I don't know that I can handle that.
So, if this is already a behavior that's prevalent in your organization, now is the time to kind of put an end to it, because this type of behavior is annoying, if anything else. And even remotely, it's probably considered a form of some kind of digital harassment.
I mean, if you think about it, let's even like I know I've had to block people for this, like on a personal note, not like on a work note, where if you don't answer within 5 minutes, you get another text and then another text and then another text. You're like, oh my gosh. I mean, if I'm not responding to you, then this, you should know that I must be doing something else. Like I will respond to you. Just give me a minute. It's not okay. And on any level, like even when you're in a relationship, if you do that, like, do you really think that that person is appreciating you emailing them texting and calling and texting and calling? Like if they can't answer, they can't answer.
That's right. And the thing is, for some whatever reason, because I guess, you know, people get nervous if they can't see the other person. So they feel like all this stuff is just going into a void somewhere. And then people who are already anxious beforehand are probably more anxious now. So, you know, that can really drive a culture toward a very negative tone really, really fast. So this is definitely something to think about and address in your organization, especially if it was already part of your norm before everybody went remote. It probably would just be exacerbated now that everybody, you know, either everybody or half your crew is remote.
Yeah.
The last thing is also seeing the hidden opportunities in communication. So I was kind of hinting to this earlier that introverted workers and most people are probably far less inhibited online versus offline interactions. So it's actually easier to be open and honest in email and text, which may not be such a bad thing to actually encourage. Of course, the flip side to watch out for is all those virtual unconscious bias where grammar, punctuation, and word choice might reveal prejudiced attitudes towards certain groups. Personally, I always think that there's a danger of misinterpretation and reading a little too much into emails and the emotional in-between-the-line messages that may just be more of a self-projection of what you feel about the situation than what the other person is actually feeling and meaning to convey through their very simple email.
Well, that's something that gets complained about or brought up about social media, right? Like people, like these word soldiers where people feel like they have more courage behind their keyboard and will say things that maybe they wouldn't normally say to a person's face. So
yes,
this might not be exactly the same thing, but it is in the sense that that some people will say things, and there's also the way that they say them, the tone, the inflection of how you said what you said is not there when it's written. So another person's going to hear it differently.
Exactly. Right. And then also, you know, not just with the social media at all, because sometimes I think what you're saying is the fact that because people are less inhibited by their emotions, they may be a little overly honest, maybe borderline rude.
Yeah.
Especially if we're talking about like online trolling or whatnot, right? But then even just in like email communication, I mean, certainly even for myself, there are times where I've kind of misinterpreted the meaning of a message because I just read it differently. Mm-hmm. Or the comma was in a certain place that just made it sound different.
Yeah, where your mental space is. Like you could be in a combative place and hear something like, you know, be careful out there. You know, like there's a certain areas of the U.S. where people's their goodbye is be careful out there. And if you're already in a combative place, you're going to be like, why? What are you saying? Are you going to jump me or something? You
know? Exactly. Exactly.
But if you're not in a combative place, you're going to be like, oh, all right. You take care too. You take care of yourself.
You too. Ditto.
Yeah.
So that's also to say, too, just a couple of final thoughts on this. One, you know, to just not leave it leave things misinterpreted in written form, whatever the case may be, your culture will probably also be reinforced through kind of regular catch-up and informal ones, right? And maybe even more so a lot of one-to-ones. So one-to-one video calls or whatnot. I mean, this can go really far in developing and maintaining healthy relationships with your employees and with your team members and connecting with them on a personal level. I know for sure that'll definitely decrease the risk of any misinterpretation, because you're not adding stories to what you're reading that may be incorrect because you actually know the person sending it to you. I think it's also too important to have those in-person get-togethers every once in a while, even if it's just a year. I was just kind of thinking about this, and I was like, you know, honestly, with all the money that was probably put toward rent, if all the physical office space goes away and the teams are work remote, you know, part of that certainly be contributed to getting, you know, everybody in travel wise into one place and just have that in-person get together once a year instead. Mm-hmm. But I think that'll really go far in cementing kind of all these connections that were formed online.
Yeah.
And the last idea to share is make it part of your culture to create meeting content with clear agendas and context. The only reason I wanted to squeeze this in here is that in my personal experience, somehow when a pandemic happened and everything moved remote, everybody decided that booking meetings on calendar was the only way to get anything done, which is the complete opposite of actually getting anything done, because number one, you're in a meeting and you're not actually doing anything to get things done. And two, most meetings lack a clear direction, so it just ends up being pointless. Mm-hmm. Make it a habit in your company culture that for everyone in the company to actually, when they set meetings, attach a clear agenda. And this will help avoid kind of these meaningless meetings that may pop up, or meetings that include people that really don't need to be there.
Like, this could have been an email. It didn't have to be a meeting.
Exactly, right? It depends on who's hosting a meeting too. Sometimes they don't know any better, so they just invite everybody. And you're like, really? Did everybody need to show up for this? Anyway, so like I said, this article actually has quite a few more suggestions that I didn't mention here. These were just the ones I thought was most relevant and impactful. So definitely when you get a chance, click on the link below in the show notes and make sure you kind of read through the article. There's a lot of great little tidbits in there about how to build a work remote culture successfully.
Well, I may be dating myself, but have you ever watched old reruns of The Dating Game? Well... I guess in this day and age, the best equivalent would be Love is Blind. I don't know.
I was about to say, I think it's probably called something else these days.
Yeah, probably. It's a little different now. Shorter skirts and more drama. You're trying to connect to someone that you can't see, and you can't take visual cues from that person. And you think you know how they feel and what they want from you based on their emails or messages. But do you really? And how do you know if what you said either made them happy or really ticked them off? Speaking to what you were mentioning earlier, like, you could be in a headspace that is not going to accept what that person said in the manner in which they meant it. I feel like every episode has me saying the word intercommunication. I wonder if we could do a drinking game with that. Maybe.
It'll be a good one for our listeners. I mean, we could do it ourselves too, but I feel like I'm going to be quite, you know, loopy by the time we get to famous examples or something.
I know. Well, I feel like I say intercommunication a lot. Intercommunication is incredibly important to build a remote culture. And especially when we're communication, I mean, it's at the core of it all. So where do you begin? To me, it starts right when you onboard your employee. We've already given you all of the best advice on how to onboard successfully. So I'm not going to repeat myself, but that's where you're going to establish what type of culture you have and how you're going to hear them when they speak. Again, laying the foundation for intercommunication. Now you're going to deep dive into what makes your team special and then what they really want and need to be successful. Take the time to get to know them on a personal level. What are their goals? What do they want from their careers? Adversely, you can budget for online courses, seminars, training opportunities so that they can expand their skills. I don't think that we put enough emphasis on getting to know each other as people. You go to work, you do your work, you talk work, you discuss work, you have meetings about work, and then you go home, right? But these are people that you spend the majority of your day with. So really, you should be getting to know each other on a personal level, because once you do, you can have a better understanding of how they're going to hear you when what you're saying is written down, like in chat or, you know, email or whatnot. The best way to do this is to get this started is by having a weekly or monthly meeting where you don't just talk shop. You get to know each other too. There's no water cooler or break room here where you can start to build relationships. This is likely the only way you're going to build a connection, so make the most of it. In my company, we do a monthly meeting. And in that meeting, one of the things we do is an icebreaker. And we ask something like, usually it's something that's seasonal. So if it's Halloween, around Halloween, I'll say, you know, what was the best costume you've ever worn? Or what was the best Christmas gift you got as a kid? Or when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up? And did you ever realize that, or anything like that? Things like this are ways to get to know a person, what their values are, where their mindset is. So, and it helps with communication. Speaking of communication, it's important you have a tool or a platform on which your team can communicate with one another. While you're at it, take a step further, and if you feel safe and your budget allows for it, hold a yearly in-person company event, or if your team is too spread out, maybe you could budget for your employees to join a co-working space in their local area. This kind of exposure is great for morale and production.
And like I said, all that money you saved on physical rent space, like rent for physical space, that could just be reallocated to this.
Absolutely. So now there are some other tips I found that are a little edgier, but they could have a lasting effect. You could host an online event such as a World Cup or a Super Bowl. You could add online multiplayer games where they can unplug from work and have some fun time while at the same time build relationships with each other. Or you could gift them company swag, like maybe not cups, pens, t-shirts or anything like that, but something that you think may be fun and thoughtful. Make sure your communication lines are always open. Let them know you're thinking of them. Send them a cheerful hello, and definitely let them know when they're doing a great job. Maybe they're not seeing your beaming smile, but they're going to absolutely know you're happy. And if you're happy and you're recognizing them and you're giving them the things that they need in order to succeed, that's going to make them happy too.
That's interesting too, right? When you think about that, when you're in person, you know, when you bump into that person, they'll kind of remind you to say a hello or say something nice, or, you know, remind you to just do that. And then also when you don't have that in person, you know, serendipitous like meeting, you almost have to be really thoughtful about, hey, when's the last time I, you know, sent a message to so-and-so to let them know they're doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
It's something else that you just have to just remember to do. And I find myself doing that too. Like I have to really think about, when did I last check in with somebody, right? Because I don't see them as often anymore. So now I, you know, will send a text and be like, hey, you know, you just popped my mind. Just want to check in, see how you're doing. And I'll tell you, I probably never did that pre-pandemic because mm-hmm. I'll just do it when I run into them.
Mm-hmm. I have to believe that the things that I have done and the provisions that I have made for my remote team are the reason why we have a healthy culture and we have a successful culture. I think that I have made it possible to build a good, well-working remote culture, although I'd venture to say there's a lot of people who don't believe that it's possible.
So I never went fully remote with my people. You know, as far as I got with the hybrid model, I honestly did not believe I was able to build a successful like culture with everybody remote. I couldn't foresee that. And honestly, I just feel like you can't fill in the gaps for a lot of things that can only translate in person.
Well, and for me, I felt like me offering a remote position was going to attract people that would appreciate a remote position. Plus, the questions that we ask during hiring are focused on people who have successfully worked remotely. So from the very beginning, we are attracting people who work well in a remote environment. So I don't find it to be that difficult. And I've never gone beyond remote. I've always only ever been remote. So, and I've never tried a hybrid model.
I will tell you though, I didn't enjoy writing that rent check every month.
I enjoyed not writing a rent check every month.
Exactly. I did not like that rent check every single month though. But the other thing is too, is like, you know, what I thought was going to happen actually did happen, which is once you went remote, it seems like there was such an uptick in like the video meetings and the video calls, right? And then there are certain antidotes to that, right? People would suggest, oh, you know, I'm going to declare like Wednesdays to be meeting free days, right? And I'm like, okay, I don't see how that's going to work. Like how is that going to work? How can you have a meeting free day? And what client and what employee are you ignoring for your meeting free day?
Yeah. Right?
So, I mean, this is not to say that when you're in person, you are any less distracted. But I feel like when you're in person, like, you know, you can easily walk by somebody's office or somebody's desk, see the door closed or see them heads down doing something. And you know, you kind of just know, hey, they're busy. I'm going to come back later. Whereas you can't do that virtually.
Well, I argue that if you're working in an office and you're working 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, I just don't feel like you are being fully productive. There's so many opportunities to be interrupted that in that 9 to 5 time schedule, let's say, maybe only about 4 of those hours are being used for actual work. And the rest of it is being used for, you know, a meeting in the coffee break room or whatever, or stopping and having a half hour long conversation with one of your, you know, coworkers or something. I just never found the value in that 9 to 5 ideal or the Monday through Friday. I just don't feel like you can be as productive as you could if you were working on a remote team.
I agree with the point that, like, if you have a Monday through Friday schedule and your team is supposed to be there at 9 to 5, and chained to their desk, you know, quote unquote chained to their desk, I agree with you. I don't think that works, to be quite honest. I don't think it's ever really worked.
Yeah.
I think, like, to be quite honest, you may want somebody there 40 hours a week and they're physically there 40 hours a week, but they're probably only doing like 30 hours of work, maybe like progress, like actual, like productive work. So no, I totally agree with you there, but I do think that, you know, just because you have in-person presence doesn't mean that you know, need to proverbially tie somebody to their desk. So I will tell you that.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that in my company, when I did it, I actually definitely didn't have that because I knew that wasn't going to work, right? So people were flexible. Like if they have an appointment, they need to, like, you know, they need to take an afternoon, like working from home, and they just want to come in the morning, completely fine, however you want to do it. The only thing I had was the message of you just need to be available during business hours, right? So if our client's trying to get a hold of you, you can't be like, I'm sorry, I'm off, like, so many hours in the afternoon kind of randomly. It's just, you know, respond within an hour or two, something reasonable, or at least respond, right? Like not that you have to go fix the problem right away, but respond so that the client still feels supported and our employees were able to left with a schedule. I think because of the fact they were sitting next to each other so much, our staff, I think, all ended up becoming really good friends. And I want to say that a lot of that is facilitated by the fact that they had so much time next to each other in the office, right? It started out as work. They didn't know each other, but they built a pretty strong friendship over time and rather quickly because the fact they were physically next to each other. And I think that actually led to, I'm hoping, even lifelong friendships after that, like on a personal level too. I just find that, like, it probably just takes a lot longer. Not that it's impossible in a work remote culture, but I think it'll take a lot longer for that connection to build that quickly versus, you know, if they were just sitting next to each other, like in the office or doing things next to each other. I see a question look on your face. You're like, no,
I disagree. I disagree. You know what's funny? Maybe it's me, but I did not do well when I worked in an in-person space. I did not get along with my coworkers as well as I did when we were no longer working together.
What? Okay, you have to explain that one.
Absolutely. Like my two closest friends we were like mortal enemies at work. Two different places, and both of them at each space. When we worked in the same space together, we were like mortal enemies. And then when we stopped working together, they're still, one is going on 25 years now. The other one, probably just about the same length of time, that we've been very close friends. And I truly believe it's because we got on each other's nerves. Because we were always together, always freaking together. Like, as soon as I'd show up to work, we were there. And then we had to work together on so many things. And my perspective was always different than her perspective. And we had a hard time working together. And I found that in this role, in this remote role, you only have to plug into a person when you want to plug into a person.
So you can take a break from them.
You can unplug from that person. And I would like to believe that so far, I have not heard one complaint from anyone on my team. And like my entire company is based on collaboration, right? Like no one person mm-hmm. is a lone wolf. Everybody works in a team in some way, shape, or form. So you are working with a coworker, but so far it seems because they plug into each other when they want to plug in each other, they have built some really great relationships. I actually have two people that live in the same town. Who knew? And then I have a couple of others that have just become great friends due to their controlled exposure to one another.
That's such a good sentence. Controlled exposure.
Yeah. So I will definitely argue that you can still build a great connection to somebody without having to sit next to them. And I want to also go back to what I said about the productivity of a person when they're working remote compared to the productivity. So I know that an argument could be made that, well, if a person is working remotely, how can you value, like, okay, you're not paying them hourly, you're paying them salary. So how do you know you're getting the work that you're getting? I would argue that, let's say your company is in construction and people do have to be there. They have to be in person, right?
Yeah, I don't know how you do construction virtually.
You cannot do construction virtually, but we're not talking virtual, right? We're talking remote.
Remote.
So for example, I'm going to throw my husband in here. My husband works for a big, huge construction, development company. They're a development company. And I argue that they do work remotely because all of the superintendents and all the foremen work out of their trucks. And a lot of the communication is done on tablets and via phone. And they get together in the office. I think it's once a week they get into the office and they do a meeting once a week. But generally speaking, they are working remotely. So how do you quantify that? Well, you've got GPS. You can track them. You can see where they are at all times. So you can have a remote team that is not working from their office, but you can time when they're working, when their computer is on, when they're actively doing something on, if you've got a portal, when they're in the truck that they're supposed to be in, how long have they been in there? That's how you quantify that. That's how you make remote make sense. I hope that made sense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think that also lends to like a larger like discussion of really how do you quantify work, right? Is it tracking to the minute details of where somebody is sitting and how long they're sitting there versus to the what their product is and when they're actually providing that, right? Or making that.
Yeah.
So I agree with you there. I think you need to track progress, but maybe not like by the hour.
Right. But I do feel like you can get a more accurate reading of how productive your team is when they are remote, because you will likely have some provisions there in order to track their productivity. Whereas you won't necessarily have those provisions in an in-office setting. They're just there from 9 to 5 or whatever your hours are. They're just there. How do you know that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing? You really mm-hmm. don't. You don't mm-hmm. know how productive they are, but you will just de facto set those provisions if they're remote. So I say, absolutely, you can build a remote culture. You can absolutely do it effectively and successfully, and you will get more productive work done.
Well, I would say that I think there got to be some kind of in-person element baked in there somewhere.
Well, that's not a world I want to live in. I'm kidding.
Huh? What'd you say?
I said, well, that's not a world I want to live in. I'm kidding.
You're like, I don't want to actually see anybody in real life ever.
No, I'm good.
Unless I choose to or deem to. But otherwise, I need a button to be able to shut you off.
Totally.
But, you know, I think at the end of the day, really, it's find a balance, right? It's not an all or nothing thing anymore. I think before our thinking was really kind of locked into, and maybe it's also because we didn't have the technology to really connect everybody, right? So when we think work remote, we think completely virtual and completely virtual, right? And when we think in office, we think locked into your office or cubicle from 9 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
And now it seems like all that is kind of blending. It's not as black and white anymore. It's kind of this gray area of this kind of what I like to call work-life integration. I know people used to say work-life balance, and I was like, well, that's completely BS, but whatever.
There's no balance.
But it's a work-life integration, right? It's you know, being able to go to work for a few hours during the day and then taking out your afternoon to take care of something personal and then jumping back in at night because your focus is on the goal of what you're supposed to be doing that day, not how many hours you've clocked in, and making sure you're still getting things done while also getting things, I mean, professionally and personally.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, you know, at the end of the day, the better way to go. But like I said, for everybody, it is, yeah, I think it's a balance. Like I could never, I don't know. We'll see. I'll try maybe next company, you know, I'm going to try doing it because there's a lot of pros to it. Like, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of pros to having a work remote team. And I'm like you sometimes, Savannah. I'm like, it is really nice to have a button to shut somebody out, right?
Right.
Especially if there's somebody like you just don't particularly care for. And then if everybody has to be in office, you kind of always have to bump into them. Whereas virtually, you can really limit that, or remotely, you can kind of limit that interaction how you desire. Mm-hmm. So definitely on board with that. So we'll see. I just know that I was super nervous about going fully remote.
Yeah. I guess I've yet to.
Savannah's like, office is overrated.
Yeah, I've yet to hear someone say, I can't wait to go into the office the once a week I'm supposed to be there.
Are you serious? I have heard people say that. People are like, I am so happy to be back at the office now. Some people are like that. And I was like, I don't want to be back all the time. But let's just be honest, though. It may not even have to be an office because nowadays, you know, you can collaborate anywhere.
Yeah.
I think it's more of the meetup, kind of like what's that company for WordPress? Automattic?
Yeah.
Like they do it, right? They get the random collaboration meetings in person and then they all scatter back to where they're coming from, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you get that, you know, short period of time where you're actually collaborating next to each other and then you disperse. I don't know. I love that idea.
We have different friends.
But yeah, we're friends.
How's that possible? I live via a Shrek model. You live via a donkey model. I live via a Shrek model. Anyway, and they work. They're a fantastic duo.
And, and they're good friends. So, hey.
They're good friends. So there we go. Oh, in each episode, we like to connect a famous example to our discussion to help you relate our talking points on a more global or well-recognized scale. You're not a donkey, by the way. I'm just saying.
You just called me a donkey.
I did. I realized that afterwards.
It took me like a minute to realize that. And I was like, I think she just called
me a donkey. She just called me a donkey. Huh. Well, I called myself an ogre. So is that a smelly ogre? That, so.
But at least you don't have buck teeth.
No, but I smell like a swamp. Anyway, sometimes we use exact examples of either famous persons or successful business owners of today or in history. And sometimes we use examples of people who inspire us and are not a donkey or an ogre and have inspired today's discussion. Take it away, Tiffany.
Will do. All right. So I got two kind of famous examples for you. One of them is Slack. So you would think that, you know, Slack being their product and what it is, you would think that they were probably well more than prepared or probably already having like a largely work remote workforce.
Yeah.
But they didn't. So prior to the pandemic, Slack actually onboarded all their employees by flying them to their San Francisco headquarters for a week of educational sessions and engagement with their leaders and management team. Must be nice to have the budget to do that as well, I have to say.
I do not.
So then post-pandemic, they actually had to hire over 25% of its workforce back since going fully remote. And so they ended up changing the onboarding process. They moved all the paperwork and all the learning sessions to online and videos and discussions about culture, values, and norms in like more interactive, again, virtual sessions with like their leaders and teammates. There you go. So even they're learning something, right?
Cool.
The other thing is they actually took this opportunity to make their executives more approachable, right? Showing their vulnerability and transforming a culture into one that had more explicitly values like the individuals and individualities. So all hands meetings that were once monthly hour-long formal productions prior to are now bi-weekly 20-minute updates with the executives dialing in from home. Of course, you know, this also featured the occasional kid crawling into the lap and stuff like that. Combine that with more town hall styles of ask me anything sessions online really kind of made everybody feel more human. So their whole point was they wanted to start meeting people where they are to project openness and then build the same culture of empathy internally that, you know, they expect that all their employees would be demonstrating to their customers. And now they're able to actually show that and do that in life. The other example I had was Alibaba. So Alibaba is... like the best way I can describe it is like the equivalent of Amazon in like in China, but
yeah,
bigger with more things, even more things too, right? Because they've like expanded into so many different things that you're kind of like, okay, but you get the idea of it. So Alibaba actually shifted their culture building activities online. So I think as you would imagine, that company, because being, you know, compared to Amazon, it's huge. There's a lot of people in it. And what they had was they had what's called an Ali Day. And so as a substitute for Ali Day, which was historically kind of like a day-long celebration across the company, Alibaba North America decided to host a remote quilt-making event where employees could come together and create one quilt for each office to commemorate this special time. And this kind of reinforced their culture values of community and collective activity.
That's crazy.
That's actually a very very creative idea, to be quite honest, right?
It is, and that's also taking a big risk, thinking that there might be somebody in the office that knows how to quilt.
Well, if you don't, you know, YouTube. But you know, that in itself is kind of like it brings you together, because it was me. I don't know how to make a quilt by any means, right? No. I'll be like, somebody show me, what am I supposed to do? Like, what am I supposed to buy? How am I supposed to do this, right? And that in itself kind of takes you out of your normal day-to-day and like gets you think about other things and probably giggling with your, you know, teammates that are probably looking at you going, how do you not know how to make a quilt? I don't know. Is that a thing? Do people just naturally know how to make quilts?
No.
I mean, no. Okay. Thank you.
No. People don't just naturally know how to make a quilt, but I guess it depends on the kind of quilt.
Is that something that's like passed down from generation to generation that just didn't make it to me?
I don't know. I mean, my mom loved quilting, but my mom also loved like needlepoint and cross stitch and crocheting and knitting. And my mom taught me how to do all of those things, but I kind of forgot to how to do those when I stopped doing them. I guess I was 10, 11, 12, somewhere around there. But then when I took knitting back up over pandemic, I took knitting back up and it all kind of came back to me. I just needed to remember the basic of it. And then I started doing it and I loved it. But I am positive that if I said to my team, hey, let's do the knitting together, I think they would look at me like, I think she's dying.
She's finally lost it.
Yes,
but it is cool to think of like kind of connection of like all your team members doing something at the same time together.
It is pretty cool. Yeah,
yeah, that is really neat. I actually like that. I'm with you. I don't know about the quilt making part of it, but I like the idea and the spirit behind it. And
yeah, you know, definitely
adapt it for yourself however you would like.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, and for me, I know it seems like I'm in love with Buffer, because I feel like I mention Buffer almost as much as I mention inner communication. And you're not wrong, but I'm going to use them as another example. And this time it's about their kick-ass remote culture. Buffer prioritizes mental and physical well-being, which to me sounds amazing. They have benefits like unlimited vacation time, free company retreats, and free technology. And having worked with them, I can say that it shows in their customer service. And might I add that I did use them as an excellent example for onboarding successfully. And to me, that's where the culture starts. Buffer just knows what they're doing. They know their team, and they've created a perfect ecosystem ripe for the current remote workforce. They also give their workforce their tools, like all of the tools that you'd need. So like a MacBook and like there's like a few other, there was a list of all the things that you get when you work for Buffer. It was crazy. But nice. Yeah, I know it's really cool. Obviously you'd have to turn it all back in after you don't work there anymore, but I feel like it's also a great retaining tool, because if you're being given all of these things, like what else are you looking for? Right? So
fair.
Yeah. With each episode, we like to share either books, tools, apps, platforms, or anything we think is a great next step and connector to our discussion. So if you like our subject matter and want to learn more, you'll have a great place to start.
So I don't think I need to go over the tools. I feel like everybody has the tools. If you haven't had the tool, you've been on a tool for sure. Yes. In the last 2 years. So I think people are well aware of that. I think at the end of the day, I mean, I don't even have a book to recommend, because heavens, how do you even get started? Although I'm sure there's a lot of books out there at this
point. Oh yeah, definitely. I'm sure there are, but I don't know that this discussion really is the place for that.
Yeah.
You need more than that, more than reading a book.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's a little bit beyond than just words on a page, right? It's about experience. It's about trial and error a little bit too.
Right? Yeah.
I think at the end of the day, like my only recommendation, or rather just advice, is, you know, find a balance that works for you. That is a balance for yourself, your employees, and your business. And then, you know, trial and error it. But just know that it's going to take a lot of effort. It's going to take a lot of thought.
Yeah.
And it is hard. It is hard to plan what your culture can be revisualized into, you know, remote workforce, right? It is hard to think all of it through. But at least trying and doing a trial and error and doing it one step at a time is better than not trying at all, because you don't want to end up with a culture that you're like, whoa, what the hell? Where did this come from, right? Because like, yes, we had said, and we keep reminding everybody, is whether you're building it intentionally or not, it's getting built. So, you know, just be aware of that and just step back. I know everybody's busy these days, trust me. I'm sure, yeah, like it probably feels even busier now post-pandemic, or I know we keep saying post-pandemic, but I feel like, I don't know. I mean, now we have like monkeypox. I mean, I don't know. Whatever. Forever pandemic.
I don't know.
You know, I'm like, are we really over it? Because it doesn't feel like we're really over it. But
we're just in a new world. We're just in a new place. We're not in the place we were in 2019.
There you go. I think it's embracing that, is the fact that we're just not where we were in 2019, 2020 anymore. Things have changed. And as business owners, we need to evolve with that. And that just means we got to, you know, squeeze that brain a little extra harder for more ideas and more ways to, you know, have our business evolve with this change in the world. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to take time. So, you know, carve out some time for yourself to work on your business. Think about this like thoroughly, and then, you know, execute the steps. And like I said, you know, give it a try and just keep tweaking it through trial and error to find the right balance for you.
Yeah. So, I do actually have recommendations on what you could use, and mine are mostly tool and platform based. I agree with you. I don't know. I feel like this conversation, and likely where many of these companies stand, our listeners stand, is beyond what a book could tell them. You want to know what kind of software would hold a remote company together. So I'll share some tools and platforms that I've used and am currently using that I feel like are fantastic. I've used ActiveCampaign, Google Workspace, HubSpot. They're fantastic all-in-one platforms for both team and client management, plus for marketing. You could try Slack, which you mentioned before. It's very popular. You could use a collaboration tool like Monday.com or Todoist. You know, like a CRM is good. If you want to utilize, if you use Facebook, let's say, and like everybody on your team is on Facebook, maybe you could create a private group on Facebook where you can, you know, have a still a social environment with one another. These are things that I've done, and it's worked really nicely. I feel like it created a bond amongst all of us. We text each other sometimes, and we Google chat each other, and we just, you know, we communicate with each other, I think, in the same manner we would if we were all working together in one building. So, you know, if you're going to build a remote team, you have to recognize what the culture is of your company right now, or what the culture of your business was before you went remote. And also, if you are not remote now, but you want to become a remote company, first and foremost, you have to discover what your culture has been up to this point, because you can't build a remote culture if you don't know where you're coming from. It's a good idea to have a meeting with each person that works for your company to find out what is it that they want out of your company. Maybe there are some things that they haven't said to you that you're like, oh, really? Huh. Okay. You know,
and well, I think we're always at the risk of that too, as the CEOs or business owners. We're always at the risk that our employees may not tell us stuff because, you know, for fear of repercussion, whatever the case may be. But
absolutely,
there are definitely things they're probably not telling you.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you feel like maybe they might be apprehensive to say something to you, then make it anonymous. But whatever it is, you do have to change your culture. You're going to have to pivot if you're going to go remote. And the only way you'll be able to do that is if you make everyone in your company a part of that conversation, not just the C-suite people, not just the big thinkers. You need the people that are on the ground who are the first step of your company, because they're the ones. What was the name of that show? I'm going back to TV again. I think it was called Undercover Boss or something like that.
Yes, Undercover Boss. Well, that's a show. I don't know if that's the one you're talking about, but
It was Undercover Boss. Yeah. I don't know if it's still out anymore, but this is what I'm speaking about. Like the guy or the woman would go undercover, and then they would find out that they're like, oh my God, like I had no idea that it was so toxic here. You know, or they'd be like, oh wow, this isn't the company that I had built. This isn't what I thought was going on down here.
Well, yeah, that becomes more important the bigger you get too. As you scale and there's more layers between you and everybody else, and like even if your entry-level staff, there's more layers, you're definitely getting more far removed from like the reality of the day-to-day.
Totally. And if you are a company that only has one layer right now, or only has one layer between the two of you, it's still just as important. So make sure you take the time to find out what your culture currently is before you start building that remote culture, and know that it all starts from the beginning and also from the top, top down, and then from bottoms up. So please join us for our next episode, where we will discuss, at what point would you need an HR and in what capacity? Do you think you're too small? The answer may surprise you. Please show us your support by following us on your preferred podcast platform, social media, and on YouTube. We'd love for you to also share our episodes. And hey, tell a friend or two. All of our links are posted below. Until next time, mind your business behind your small business.